The United States has conducted extensive research on germ warfare, going so far as to mimic the steps that a hostile power might take to attack with biological weapons. That is the finding of a New York Times story today. It's from a forthcoming book called Germs, America's Secret War Against Biological Weapons. New York Times editor Stephen Engelberg is one of the authors of that book. Mr. Engelberg, you report on a program of U.S. germ warfare research that began during the Clinton administration. Why at that time? Why did they start then?
Well, we've been doing defensive research for a number of years, but in the mid-90s, there was a rising fear of the threat of biological weapons. We'd had some reports about Iraq's program, which was quite extensive, more than we'd known, and there was an increasing knowledge of what the Soviet Union had accomplished in the area of germ warfare. We stopped, as a country, making biological weapons in 1969. President Nixon gave up voluntarily the program. And ever since then, we have been kind of in the dark as a country as to how they work, how they're made, and there was a sense that one needed to become much more knowledgeable about the mechanics, the intricacies of producing a weapon, producing a bomb, or producing the material itself in a factory.
How big a program was it?
Well, not, these programs aren't that big, and that's one of the fascinating things about germ weapons, as we point out in the book. If I were to give you a design of an atomic bomb tomorrow, you would be embarking on a multi-billion dollar industrial program of refining uranium and, you know, extensive kinds of things that would be needed. In germ warfare, if you get that one or two knowledgeable people to give you the blueprint, it's very cheap. One of the programs we wrote about was a Pentagon program to build a working germ factory where they were able to make quite a good facility for $1 million, which in the weapons field, is, as we all know, is chump change.
Now, White House spokesman Ari Fleischer was asked about this today, and he said, first, the research was purely defensive in nature, and second, that it all stayed within the bounds of the 1972 treaty that bans biological weapons. Both statements accurate?
They're debatable. The truth is, there's no court, there's no judge, there's no jury that weighs what's inside an international treaty or outside it. We talked to a number of people who said that the administration, Clinton and Bush, had studied these issues and found these things to be within the treaty. We talked to some people in the government who felt less comfortable about one of the programs, which was a CIA program, to build a mock biological bomb and to test its characteristics. The treaty clearly allows defensive research. It says that if your purposes are peaceful or prophylactic, you're allowed to go ahead with all manner of research. But what it does not permit you to do is develop, retain, or acquire biological weapons. And the question here would be, does making a mock bomb that perhaps doesn't have all the moving parts to or fuses as they didn't, is that in fact violate the part of the treaty that says you can't develop a weapon?
Describe this mock bomb a bit more. You say it wasn't a finished product, but I gather that wasn't for lack of trying.
Well, no, they very deliberately chose not to finish it. It did not have a fuse, so that if you had filled it with germs, you couldn't explode it. But it was deemed to be sufficiently similar to a Soviet-designed germ bomb that you could get valid tests of how it worked.
This, though, was happening after there was no more Soviet Union. I mean, were there
That's
such
right.
bombs around in the world?
There were indeed. The Soviet Union, and it's before it went out of existence, made a number of these things, and the CIA had reports that people were trying to obtain them and that they were, in fact, available for sale, although our spies were unable to get an exact copy, which is why they went out to make one, or at least a portion of one.
Now, on another point, do I understand correctly that one research activity was people who were working for the United States actually acquiring potentially dangerous substances in order to show how easily they could be acquired?
Dangerous substances is a tricky word there. What they acquired were very straightforward pipes that you could get at a hardware store, a fermenter that you could buy from the internet, which when put together properly and then fed a germ agent, voila, you have not an innocent factory at all, but a germ plant. And the difference between the two is very difficult to detect.
What's your sense after a decade of this kind of research? Does the United States seem to understand germ warfare a lot better now than it did, say, in 1990?
Well, I think we do. I mean, the question about these programs is not the level of understanding, but their secrecy, because secrets are in our country fairly inevitably become public, and when they do, there's a fair chance that things can be misunderstood. You know, if you look at the full range of these programs, over a period of several years, we were building a germ factory, we were testing at least a portion of a bomb. You look at the totality of those things, you look at them all together, and you have to ask yourself, what would another country say? What would we say if Iraq or North Korea were discovered to be doing these very things?
Stephen Engelberg, thank you very much for talking with us today.
My pleasure.
Stephen Engelberg is an editor at the New York Times and with William Broad and Judith Miller, a co-author of Germs, America's Secret War Against Biological Weapons.
NPR is solely responsible for this program. Tapes and transcripts are available. Call anytime 1-877-NPR-TEXT. And please visit our website at www.npr.org. This is NPR, National Public Radio.